take a deep breath, take the higher road. That's what they always say, as if they know the way. They won't take it from me. But don't ever doubt yourself, it's life ain't just a dream. You make your own, so kick and scream. The people move alike with a never-ending force. You never had the chance, so what you waiting for? The day has come, my friend, cause this is war.
Welcome. Today we are going to partake in a thought-provoking exploration of the potential risks associated with vaccines through the lens of the bolus theory. In a world where vaccination has become a cornerstone of public health initiatives, the bolus theory challenges us to re-examine the conventional wisdom surrounding vaccine safety and efficacy. At its core, the bolus theory suggests that the inadvertent introduction of vaccine particles into the bloodstream during administration could lead to unforeseen consequences and potential harm. As we navigate a landscape where vaccine mandates and mass inoculation campaigns are increasingly prevalent, the implications of the bolus theory loom large, prompting us to consider the delicate balance between public health protection and individual well-being. Through a critical examination of the scientific evidence, anecdotal reports, and emerging research, we delve into the complexities of vaccine-induced harm and the role of the bolus theory in shaping our understanding of this contentious issue. We will navigate the nuances of vaccine safety, weigh the risks and benefits of current vaccination practices, and strive to foster a more informed and nuanced dialogue around this crucial topic. By shedding light on the potential implications of the bolus theory, we aim to empower individuals to make informed decisions about their health and well-being in an era defined by uncertainty and rapid change. You're listening to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I'm your host, Nurse Kimberly Overton. Before we get started today, I do want to encourage our listeners, if you have questions or comments, or perhaps you want to share your own experiences with what you're seeing on the front lines of healthcare, you can now submit those to us by sending them directly to nurses@americaoutloud.com. We will be featuring your questions and comments every Friday on a special Q&A episode with the nurses. We encourage all of you to engage in the battle and find your voice in this fight. But until you are able to do that, we will continue to be that voice for you. Joining me today is Mark Giardo. He is a citizen scientist, the author of multiple breakthrough articles on COVID, and a senior advisor in the bio and auto industries. He is also the author of a new book, The Needle Secret. Mark, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for hosting me. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. I'm really thrilled to have you on. I heard about you from the author of What the Nurses Saw, Ken McCarthy, which I am actually featured in that book. And I heard that, you know, you have this new book coming out, The Needle Secret. So I was really excited to dig into that. But I'm very interested in your bolus theory. That is something I really want to focus our conversation on today. I would love to just hear a little bit before we get started and dig into all of this, just learn a little bit about your background and really how you found yourself kind of probably like the rest of us, just thrust into this world of vaccine harm.
Okay. My background, first of all, I'm a Franco-American. I was born in the U.S. and that's why my accent is sort of decent for a Frenchman.
Yes. Who is that?
My background is essentially business. I was trained notably in consulting. I worked for an American consulting company called Booz Allen in Hamilton. So I was trained in the scientific method ruthlessly, if I may. So I have an MBA from one of the leading MBAs in the world called INSEAD here in France and Singapore. And I'm essentially a business guy, an entrepreneur. I have been working in the automotive industry, consulting the CEOs and the executives of the largest car companies in the world on a variety of issues, extremely complex issues mostly. And I left, I was the head of the automotive practice, for Cisco's advisory, group for about 10 years. And I left Cisco to launch a startup with the former head of engineering at BMW to try and reinvent the car. So I'm used to dealing with complex issues and topics. And after failing to raise the kind of money I needed, I happened to help out a friend of mine who started here in Paris an anti-cancer vaccine, a DNA anti-cancer vaccine. So I dove into the science right before COVID. And so I was sort of prepped. I had all the material, intellectual, conceptual knowledge and techniques to undertake an understanding of what was going on. And I started out like everybody else, convinced vaccine worked very well. Pretty afraid for my kids when they told me, that COVID was killing 5% of people. And then I started working on it because that's what I do. My brain, once I finish my 3 hours of REM sleep, my brain wakes up and starts questioning things it heard during the day. So there are so many red flags that I started investigating and started finding some really interesting stuff, basically. First red flag was the fact that the COVID was basically killing 0.1% of people, which is a very low infection fatality rate. So I went on to demonstrate that with a mathematical method, and then I went on to test it on New York and found a model New York, and then I wrote my first article, and that was the start of it. And I've been working almost full time, and my full time is a lot for the past 4 years. First, I worked on epidemiology, and then in January 2021, I realized that something was off. Something was off from the beginning, but here I was seeing something that didn't make sense, and that's the fact that the curve, the supposedly the death curves of COVID had an inflection point. So they had been in most of the world in the northern hemisphere, they had been going down since November 2020. And so they were supposed to end like mid-January. And at the start of the year, basically New Year's Eve, there's an inflection point and it starts kicking back in. And that made no sense to me. And ever since I've been whistleblowing and saying that these vaccines are harming people somehow.
So you came into this much like myself, not anti-vax at all, but just simply questioning the safety of these particular vaccines because you had, for me as a nurse, nurses don't receive very much education on vaccines other than safe, effective, and necessary, and doctors receive a little more than that. And we just always implicitly trusted them. Is that kind of how it was for you as well?
I had worked on vaccine deeply, because I had worked on this anti-cancer vaccine. So I knew I was fairly knowledgeable. I would say much more knowledgeable than most. Actually, I was at the leading edge of the latest knowledge in this topic with those DNA vaccines, and we were competing with Moderna and BioNTech. So, but I entered just like you did. And then I realized something was off and investigated. And that my first, there's really a number of observation. I'm an entrepreneur and I'm a consultant. What I do is I look into reality. I like observing things. And the first thing I observed was that, of course, most people were okay. And that needs to be acknowledged scientifically, not discounted. And then some, too many are harmed. And that was a that's a fundamental pillar of the bolus theory, because if you actually, you know, I tested, for example, I tested my son's blood work. I had my son's blood work tested, and he was fine. He didn't have any D-dimer or anything after his vaccination. So once you acknowledge that, it changes a lot of things, because it means that it can't be the vaccine on its own. It doesn't mean it's not the vaccine. It means it's, you know, as often when you have accidents, and I come from the world of manufacturing and industry, when you have industrial accidents, for example, it's often a combination of factors. And so there are many people who are talking about aspiration, which nurses know a lot about, because
yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that. Go ahead, but I do want to touch on that with you.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were struggling, and I, to tell you the truth, I didn't know anything about aspiration at the time. So a lot of people started suggesting, well, maybe it's because of aspiration, and the idea of aspiration is a 100-year-old idea. And it's the fact that when you inject, when you insert your needle intramuscularly, you're going to cross, you might insert the needle inside a blood vessel and inject it directly into the bloodstream, which in 1934 was known as creating anaphylaxis. Okay. So in the 1930s, anaphylaxis wasn't really an allergic reaction, but much more known as actually directly injecting a produce, whatever it would be. It could be pollen, or when you were trying to desensitize allergies, it directly into the bloodstream. So that came out really high into my different hypotheses. There was others. There was the circulating spike was one. You know, there's this poison was another one. And then I went on to do what I do best, which is root cause analysis. Basically, what you do is you say, well, how can I test these different hypotheses? And a lot of, there's two studies that started showing on animals that if you use the AstraZeneca, that was in Munich, and the Pfizer that was in Hong Kong, teams had tested it on mice, and they found that when injected intravenously, they were getting the same adverse events that we're seeing. So they were seeing heart damage, myocarditis, necrosis. They were seeing liver issues. They were seeing thrombosis and the like. So I didn't stop there, because to me that was sort of the proof already. But I didn't understand the whole process, and I wanted to really figure out what was going on. So I continued pulling on the thread, if you will, and looked again at the autopsies, at the biopsies, at all of these events, and observed one thing that was fundamental. In many autopsies, what you're seeing is damage to the blood vessels, the arteries, notably in the aorta, and the damage is caused by T cells, and it's caused in an extremely concentrated fashion, and that's that proves two things. I mean, there's at least I don't know how to do it any other way. It needs to be what is called a bolus, which is a concentrated cloud of vaccine particle hitting that area in a highly concentrated way and triggering an immune reaction, which is the purpose of the vaccine. So it's the actual mechanism of action of the vaccine that's actually the fundamental. But the important element, it's the fact that it's concentrated. So you see, having a T cell attack an endothelial cell on your blood vessel walls is not in itself a problem. if it's isolated. We have that all the time. You know, every day we lose cells here and there, but the local ecosystem is capable of dealing with it. But if you carpet bomb your vascular system, well, the ecosystem is gone. There's no emergency services, if you will, right? All the natural healing processes are off. And so you're gonna get the demand, right? You're gonna get a huge demand for coagulation. You're gonna get a huge demand for angiogenesis to rebuild blood vessels. You're gonna get all of these, but they're gonna be off balance. So you're gonna have thrombosis and necrosis, and you're gonna have angiomas and fistulas because the demand is so big that it's not focused anymore, like you would have when you have a scratch or a wound. Here you have wounds all across your vascular system, and it's causing enormous damage. And I continue to, so that was, you know, that's basically reproduced because it's reproduced on animals. There's this very sad story you might have heard of, this little boy who's 6 years old at the time called Milo Hedberg.
Yes, I did,
Who's
unfortunately.
right? So he was injected directly in his blood port, and the doctor probably knew that was not the best thing to do. So he most likely did it slowly, so infused it instead of like you do with some of the drugs that you nurses deliver sometimes. But he didn't do it slow enough, and he caused tremendous damage to this little boy. So there's numerous evidence that this is happening. What was interesting is going further again and try to understand what else is happening. And what you end up doing is scenario building. So you base, you know, I don't know, I don't know how old you are, but you're probably a whole much younger than me. And I was already a kid when that movie came out, but there was this movie called the Fantastic Voyage, where, you know, they would try to, they would the scientists were shrunk into a vessel, a sort of shuttle into the bloodstream of a person. And if you do that, if you sort of put yourself into the vascular system as the bolus goes down, there's a number of scenarios that can occur. And notably, when it gets to the organs and the systems, like the nervous system or other the skin or something like that, stuff like that, you can have two scenarios. Either it's going to be really big and cause huge rampage, and then what's going to happen is the demand for coagulation in the capillaries is going to be very big, and you're going to create clots. And that those clots are going to cause what is called ischemia. So you're basically going to stop the blood from flowing into the organs and fueling the organs, and the organs or part of the organs are going to die. You're going to have necrosis, and that explains many of the adverse events that we're seeing. It can be, you know, I have a friend whose gallbladder was completely dead. Two other friends who've lost 20 and 30% of their lungs, where you can have type 1 and type 2 diabetes if your beta cells in a pancreas are hit. It's the same. It's to a certain extent, it's a cookie cutter approach to things where you have the same phenomenon harming differently, harming in the same way, but having different effects depending on the function of the organ that's harmed. So that's one other scenario I've discovered. And the other scenario is if that cloud of particles gets, of course, it gets fragmented, it gets disseminated, but because the vascular system is there to do that, it's there to disseminate things, the oxygen and nutrients across the body. So it's gonna fragment it. And in a number of cases, it's going to hit in a more cluster fashion. So it's going to hit here and there in little groups. And the immune system is going to attack, but not in a in an overwhelming way, but more like focused laser way. And it's going to poke holes into the vascular system, and it's going to create vascular leakage. And there's huge amounts of anybody. I encourage anybody to go to Google Scholar and seek for capillary leakage or vascular leakage. In case reports around COVID vaccination, there's tens of them, and that's clearly appearing. And what's new, I think, in the bolus theory and in my book, The Needle Secret, is that I explain that when that occurs, two things happen. What you're doing is you're breaking blood tissue barriers that each have their own role, depending on the organ. And in the brain, the blood-brain barrier, which is called the BBB, is there essentially to protect the brain. And so if you poke holes into the brain, you're going to let in naturally elements that are not supposed to go there. Right, that's why the barrier is there. What is very interesting is the fact that it's known now for the past few years that all the neurodegenerative disease are caused, the root cause is a leak in the blood-brain barrier. Namely, vaccines like the COVID vaccines, but other vaccines also are causing Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, as well as Huntington's disease. And so what's also interesting is myocarditis, which is probably the illness or the ailment that that has been most promoted to a certain extent, but it's not certainly not the most important one, is also holes into your blood heart barrier, if you will. It's a permeability of your capillaries in the heart, and same thing, you have metabolic waste and other elements that penetrate the hearts and touch the myocytes and are not supposed to be in contact, create inflammation, which is again the definition of myocarditis. And you can, you know, I can continue on numerous other examples, endometriosis. I could talk about, for example, sperm count going down in men because sperm are supposed to be protected against the immune system. And if you have a permeability in the blood testis barrier, then the immune system is going to attack sperm, and then therefore men are going to have less sperm count than they should. It also explains, for example, when the same thing occurs in endocrine glands, the fact that there's supposedly over secretion of hormones, but it's not over secretion. It's normal secretion, but there's no barrier to regulate anymore. So it's not the blood's feedback that's dictating how much hormone is delivered, is simply what you're producing. There's an example, for example, of two teenage boys who were, I think, 14 and 16, who died because their endocrine gland was hit and their epinephrine was delivered in high dose to the heart. And their heart just couldn't take it.
Right.
So that's the whole part of the bolus theory. And a second part of bolus theory is the fact that this bolus goes places that we had that it's not supposed to go to. So there are certain cells in our bodies that are at risk of contamination, that are at risk of when we are sick, or you know, when we have viruses or we have bacteria. And the cells that have evolved, and we've evolved to hide away in like bunker-like areas in the bone marrow, in endothelial niches, these cells. And these cells are our stem cells. And if you have a bolus, it's going to go places. It would never, the vaccine was going to go places it would never go naturally or very, very rarely.
With that lipid, the lipid nanoparticles being in there, that they just go everywhere. They go everywhere in the body. They slide under all the door cracks as
Yeah,
well.
it if it's but if you inject it in a bolus, it's going to go places that a normal vaccine would not go to, even nanoparticles. So people who get a decent dose, an injection that really stays in the muscle or goes through the lymphatic system and gets into the body, the chances are going to be 1 in 1 million, or 1 in 10 million that you actually hit a stem cell. Whereas it's going to be much, much higher if you get a bolus. And if those stem cells are hit, then there's a huge problem. And that's because we've evolved against it, right? So for a good reason. And I believe that's one of what I've said so far was proven, is all proven and hard tested, reproducible with animals, etc. Here I'm more in the conceptual area, hypothetical area, but it's still extremely robust. And what it's going to do, it's going to create cancer. And let me tell you why. We know that the stem cells in face to a virus, a bacteria, or a toxin, or whatever, is not going to be able to deal with it. Why? Because if it had that capability, it wouldn't have been hiding, one, and two, it would have given it to normal cells. All normal cells emerge from stem cells. So if ever stem cells had a solution against, against, for example, viruses, normal cells wouldn't need to commit suicide, right? When a cell is infected, it typically, with the help of T cells, commits suicide. And so we know it's bad if a virus, but also a vaccine, actually enters a stem cells. And the only thing that a stem cell can do, and that's what it does when it gets too much oxygen, by the way, is what I called evasion by replication. So basically what it's going to do, it's going to split very quickly to dilute the poison and to protect the DNA as much as possible, right? And that's the way it does it. And the problem with that, there are two problems with that. The first problem is the fact that you are going to create a lot of stem cells that are not needed. And to take an analogy I typically use is you're going to have 10 cooks in the kitchen. So when you're ordering your burger, you're getting 10 burgers instead of having one burger. So when there's a demand in an organ for a cell repair, you're going to have 10 times, 100 times more cells than what's needed. And so over time, you're going to have a tumor. If that happens into the bone marrow, you're going to have leukemia. And depending on the maturity, the seniority of the stem cell, whether it's high level, multipotent stem cells that can become, that has enormous scaling ability, or if it's a low level stem cell, progenitor cell, on the one end, you're going to have very aggressive, high grade cancer, like thromboblastic leukemia, or you're going to have indolent, low grade cancer, like chronic lymphocytic leukemia. So my theory here explains why you have extremely aggressive cancers and not. It's really a question of luck. Of course, there are more stem cells that are low grade, sorry, low ranking. So hopefully you have less of those hyper aggressive cancer, but it's extremely consistent. And now what's really I had, you know, I had worked, I've worked in cancer for 6, 7 years now. And I had always believed this whole theory about mutation, even though I had never questioned it. But now I don't believe in it anymore. I think it's completely upside down. I think what cancer is contaminated stem cells. And there's a huge amount of research in the past 20 years, notably in the US and in Israel and other countries, that state that basically tumor cells are stem cells. And when you compare tumor cells with stem cells, you find that they have a number of stem cell qualities. So, for example, P53 inhibition, which is a known factor of cancer, is actually something that stem cells have. But they also have hTERT, which is a gene that is expressed to repair telomeres that gets used up too quickly in stem cells, and that help cancer become eternal, basically. There is midbodies, there's the lack of MHCs or immune suppression. There's a number of elements that are shared between tumor cells and stem cells that confirm what I'm saying. And for people to understand why I thought this in the first place is, if you consider that normally a cell that's actually penetrated by these vaccine is going to be destroyed because it's expressing the spike protein in or bits of spike protein on receptor outside called MHC, that means that every single one of these normal cells that is contaminated by the vaccine is going to to die.
You know, I
So
think
if it's
I don't want to interrupt you, but we're coming up on a hard break. But I do want to say, you know, I think that there is a lot of credence to your theory. It really does account for a lot of the issues that we're seeing. And I really want to delve into this on the other side of this break, and talk a little bit about whether or not do you think that this is intentional or not? Or is it just, you know, a happy accident, I guess, for these people?
You want me to talk now about that?
No, we're going to go to break. And then when we
Okay.
get back, I want to talk about that and about also moving forward. What is the resolution? What is the cure for this, the bolus theory?
Okay.
But we'll hit that on the other side. But America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio network. You can also listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best in-class apps available on Apple, Android, or Alexa, 24/7 great talk radio. All of our shows go to podcast the following day. You can hear them on apps such as Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, and many more. Be sure to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts for me. Don't forget to check out our online store at americaoutloud.shop, where you can find all of the products that we represent on our network at a discounted rate. I'll catch you on the other side of this break. Stay with us.
It's time and this is
cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. Be a part of a revolutionary new healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interests of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
When God, through His grace and mercy, gave us free will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutLoud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I'm your host, Nurse Kimberly Overton. Wherever you're listening from today and whatever you're doing, I thank you for giving me the gift of your time. Be sure to make AmericaOutLoud.news your daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. We all must do our part and share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, and videos so we can help secure America's future. If you're just joining us, I've been talking with the author of the new book, The Needle Secret, Mark Chiodo. Mark, thanks again for being here with me today.
Again, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we really dove deeply into your bolus theory, which I, again, like I said on the as we went into break, I think that there is a lot of credence to this theory, and it could certainly account for many of the issues that we're seeing. When you touched on aspiration earlier, and you know, as a nurse, and I've been in healthcare for 28 years. Before I was a nurse, I was a clinical medical assistant. So I learned how to give injections roughly 28 years ago. When I was being trained on how to give injections, always they told us to aspirate, right? We would put the needle in, and you explained that well. You put the needle in and then you're going to pull back on the plunger just to make sure that you're not in a blood vessel, because you don't want to inadvertently introduce these particles directly into the bloodstream, because they can cause anaphylaxis and other great harm. So what's interesting to me is that, again, this is how I was trained, and it was on every injection that we gave intramuscularly. This has been a contentious issue in the medical field. You may or may not know this, but there's a lot of debate on whether we should be aspirating or not aspirating. It's like when to aspirate, when not to aspirate a needle. And many people will say that there are situations in which there is no obvious need to aspirate. For example, they are telling you now, and this is new to me. Again, I've been doing this 28 years, but now they're suggesting that when you give vaccines, because it's performed in a large section of the muscle, that there's absolutely no need to aspirate, because there's almost no risk of the needle entering a major vein or artery. I completely disagree. I believe we should still be aspirating, because there is still a considerable risk of hitting a blood vessel. Do you think that your bolus theory, do you think that this can be intentional, or and that is why they are all of a sudden telling nurses and training nurses to not aspirate during vaccines? What are your thoughts on that?
No, I'm sorry. I don't think people who decide on all of this often are bureaucrats. I'm not so sure they're smart enough to actually have a plan.
I often say that.
Okay, so no, I mean, you know, planning is complicated. I think about incompetency and and lack of understanding, of systemic understanding. Let me give you my position on the aspiration. I think aspiration it can be useful. I've had discussion recently with Dr. John Campbell on his show about it. He's a big fan of it. I think it works, but it works only in the rare cases where the needle is indeed inserted into a blood vessel, which is rare. But I think that's why people took it away. Okay. It's rare. But the problem is the following, is that for 100 years, I think the medical establishment got it completely wrong. And to tell you the truth, let me explain you why. And it's a normal human being mistake. It's an intellectual trick our brain plays to us. We are convinced that the only way to inject intravenously is to do it the way it's done, the way you learned it. Which is the only way to do the entire dose, of course. But urine, you know, the muscle is a fluid, all right? It's cells with fluid. If you insert that needle, you are going to, you know, it's an inch long. You're going to cut through muscle and cut through vessels, a number of them. And if those vessels are close enough to the tip, and big enough, you are going to a certain extent, remotely inject a part of the dose directly intravenously, and that's not even, you know, you don't even need to test it. It's a scientific law of fluid dynamics. It's a, you know, we've known that since the 15th century or 16th century. Pascal and Bernoulli, French and Swiss scientists, we've known that. We can be certain that is occurring. And I actually, in the book, I actually have a table where I can calculate, you know, what amounts of nanoparticles you inject based on the size of the vessel you rupture and its distance. And you can inject significant a number of particles. Remember, an aortic dissection is most likely something like 60,000 cells that have been destroyed. Pfizer vaccine injects you with 10 billion. So it's 0.0006% of the dose.
No.
So even if you inject by mistake 1% of the dose through a small 1 millimeter or less than 1 millimeter vessel, and there are some, the muscle is loaded with vessels, you're going to have that. So my message here is that I've realized something massive is that we've been harming people for decades. Even, you know, and it's proven. There's two studies with experienced nurse aspirating steroids and showing that at least 2% are showing signs of cough when they do that. So it means that at least 2% and most likely 5% of every single intramuscular injection is going directly in IV in a significant way.
Right. And I guess with the aspiration, my position on it is, you know, what harm is it going to do to just aspirate? It takes all of 2 seconds. Just, I mean, it is rare, right? It's rare that you're going to hit a blood vessel. But to me, I mean, it's just something, like I said, it's ingrained in me. It was ingrained in my training. And I've always do, I still do it to this day.
No, but it's quite clear that is, it's going to stop some rare cases, but it's going to help. I mean, it certainly helps. It also, I think what it does also, it helps also in the way you inject, i.e. when you do that, you don't inject brutally, you inject slowly. Right. And the fact that you're injecting slowly is also extremely important because the bolus that you're going to create down the road is going to be less concentrated. right? So there's a lot of elements. Now, going back to your question, is it on purpose? I don't think so. First of all, I say it's an accident because nurses and non-professional injectors never, you know, never imagine harming people. They're trying their best to help people. So it's a medical procedure accident. That is 100% sure. Where I have issues is the fact that, you know, I'm a non-doctor. I'm not, you know, I'm not a nurse. I'm not an epidemiologist. And I saw in the data in very early January 2021 that the vaccines were harming, or the vaccination campaign was harming millions of people. I saw it immediately. So the problem I have is that the public health authorities across the globe, almost everywhere, but have doubled down, tripled, quadrupled down, and then added the kids, which never needed it. That causes me a question. You know, that's intentional. That's a decision. And I think it's a flight forward. I think it's a flight forward is the term. Trying to avoid accountability and responsibility, and not having any problems in harming people, in a great way. And that I have immense problem with that.
Right. Yeah. And I agree with you. As far as the nurses injecting, yeah, we never inject, a child or an adult with a vaccine with an intention to harm. But my thought process here is the whole, you know, best practice. They're saying don't aspirate anymore. And I'm just thinking, is it from the top down? I think all of anything intentional would be top down. And with nurses, as far as injecting rapidly, or not injecting rapidly, I think a lot of nurses do tend to kind of slam the vaccines, which is unfortunate, but especially when you're vaccinating a child who's kind of all over the place, you know, moving around, and they're trying to just get the vaccine in, they're injecting it too quickly. And I think it is a medical error. I think we need better training on that. But I do just sometimes wonder if from the top down, these types of policies aren't doing more harm than good.
I think it's more, as a business person, I know that organizations are dysfunctional. I've yet to see an organization that's functional. So when you take that principle into question, you apply it to public health or to hospital, et cetera, you know, it's a recipe for disaster. Now, the thing I haven't said previously is, in my book, In the Needle Secret, and to tell you the truth, I was very uncomfortable with my findings, is I actually have tied back most of modern day illnesses. So I've tied back endocrine disorders, I've tied back neurodegenerative disease, leaky gut, obesity, infertility, sudden infant death syndrome, and of course, autism. And I tested my theory on autism. I'm not going to go through the details of it, but basically I have 1 in 1 trillion chance of being wrong. Mm-hmm. Because I set up 40 different hypotheses, not knowing anything about autism, and they all came out positive, which is mathematically impossible. So I know that Bose theory is extremely robust, and autism is evidently caused by these the multiplication of these shots. Now, in the book, I also demonstrate that the younger generation, especially in the U.S., but also in Europe, are being given many more shots, and they're being harmed much more, and so we are maiming the entire age pyramid. And if the U.S. and Europe continues the way it is, it's not 60 million disabled you're going to get, but 150 million. Half of the population is going to be so sick that society will not, you know, it's not sustainable. So I think it's more lunacy than anything else, because nobody in their right mind would want that. Because even if you're, you know, if you're rich, you're going to lose everything. You know, nobody wants that. I think it's collective dystopia.
Yeah, I could agree with that. But, you know, I think honestly, and like I said, I was never anti-vaccine. Just this whole COVID situation really caused me to open my eyes and really start asking a lot more questions. And I've really come to the belief that like we're all vaccine injured on some level. I believe that because as you alluded to, there's so all of these chronic illnesses that we're dealing with. If you think about the, you know, the autoimmune conditions, the neurodegenerative conditions, the ADHD, autism is a big one. I was really surprised to find that the incidence of autism among the unvaccinated was virtually zero. To me, that was so compelling. The sudden infant death syndrome, we're all conditioned to believe that, you know, just normal, healthy babies just suddenly die in their sleep for no reason. And that's no more true than it is that adults will just suddenly die, you know, following vaccination for no reason. So I believe that a lot of the chronic illnesses can be attributed back to vaccines. I mean, I'm at the point now where, you know, I didn't come into the fight anti-vax. I'm definitely leaving that way. Whether or not they have their place, I don't know, but I am at the point where I will not receive or administer another vaccine as long as I live. That's where I'm at.
I don't know, we probably don't have much time left, but let me finish on a few points that are about hope. Because my book is about hope, and I'm not a scaremonger. Okay?
Yes. Yeah.
So it's very important. Some people are saying everybody's going to die, and that's not true. I mean, we're all going to die a bit later on.
Right.
So the first thing is, you're completely correct. Everybody got hits. Okay. So there's two studies, one in Japan from Kanaha et al., another one from Bergin et al. In Basel Hospital, University Hospital, that show that everybody's heart's been slightly damaged. So, which means that you always have a bolus, but your body heals. We have marvelous bodies, and they heal most of the time. Okay, so that's not everybody's going to die. Thankfully, our bodies can take the hits, many hits, and we've evolved for that. That's the first point. The second point is, while we can very easily stop harming our loved ones in our community by finding, if you know, by either stopping vaccines or and by injecting better everything that's injected. So it's just it needs to be, there needs to be a complete review, a complete overhaul of vaccine delivery mechanism. Be it through needleless pressure guns or patches, whatever, or simply by not doing it. So there's a whole hope of stopping this, and that's what I'm trying to do by basically saying, look, guys, you're not compliant to the basic injection protocol, which is intravenous. So in 100% of the time, okay? So that means that we can change that very quickly and have an impact very quickly. And the last piece of hope I have is around curing many of these illnesses and most of these illnesses which are supposedly uncurable. And how do you do that? Well, you can do that. I don't have time to talk about arteriosclerosis, but there are ways to cure arteriosclerosis. It's in the book if people are interested. But the general case, the FDA has approved a technique to repair after radiotherapy treatment, and that's called hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Now, hyperbaric oxygen therapy works very well to do two things: to repair the blood vessel linings, as well as to revascularize and rebuild the organs. Okay, it's not going to rebuild everything, but some of the organs that are sort of in most of the people are not, you know, completely hit by a bolus that destroys the organ. So there's a lot of hope in terms of repairing that and repairing the endothelium and all those leaks. Works extremely well. So there are multiple cases of people being cured of Alzheimer's, of autism, of Parkinson's disease, And I believe that's applicable also to endocrine disorders, which is not applicable to endometriosis, to infertility, and to many other of these chronic disease. Unfortunately, hyperbaric chambers are rare. I mean, there's a limited number in the U.S. and across the world. It's very limited. But you can rent mild hyperbaric or buy mild hyperbaric oxygen therapy tents that seem to be working very well. I mean, I have some of my readers who've come back to me and have already early results after just a few weeks having read my book. So that's very encouraging. And I believe also that pure normal baric oxygen therapy can actually work. It's just slower. But sometimes slow is good and progressive. So there's a huge opportunity to reset in a way the health of Americans and the health of Westerners, who are mostly the ones who are unhealthy globally. And to a certain extent, you know, it's not make America great again, it's make Americans' health great again. That's a possibility, and that includes obesity. That includes obesity in my opinion. So there's a huge hope with all of this.
Yeah, and I actually read reading the article that you did on obesity, and I had to agree with everything you said, because you talked about growing up in the 70s. I was born in the 70s, and you're right. You know, we had junk food all the time, and
of course,
you did not see the obesity rates that you are seeing now, and that's a whole other topic we definitely don't have time to delve into, but I found it very, very interesting. I don't know if it's that we're just less physically active now, but I think that it's a lot more of the, obviously, the processed foods and the chemicals. And I think it's a variety of different things and it could be potentially the vaccines as well. I think there are a lot of different factors that contribute to these rising obesity rates, but you're right. It's not just poor eating habits at all. That is not the only factor, certainly. But we don't have much more, actually, that we are out of time. But thank you so much. We're going to make sure to include links to your book and to your Substack so that everybody, if they're not already following you, can follow the incredible work that you're doing. Mark Giardone, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And that's all the time that we have for today, friends. But remember, we are here on the air 5 days a week, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can also catch the encore at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please be sure to tune in and listen to myself and my amazing sister nurses. As we walk you through all of these hot topics, we will empower you with information and education. We will advocate and we will stand in the gap for you because we are nurses and this is what we do. I'm your host, Nurse Kimberly Overton, and you can find me here every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. Until next time, be safe, be well, and God bless. Remember that we are in a war for truth. We are putting out a bounty on the real misinformation and exposing the purveyors of propaganda. No topic is off limits as we shine our lights and expose the darkness.
It's time.